You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled, and marginalized creatives and their art. You can now support the show by signing up as a patron on Patreon. For just £1 a month, you'll get a shout out on the show, early access to episodes and other special goodies. So do check it out on patreon.com/AG Parker. And now, on with the show. Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, Charlotte Lunn.
Hello.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. listeners, I've just told Charlotte that my puppy has walked into my workspace and pissed on the carpet. So that just about sums it up. before we get into that, tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Oh, so I'm a published poet. I had my first collection published last year with Verve Poetry Press. And I'm also a bookseller at the lovely independent bookshop Scarthing Books in Cromford, and I run workshops and offer mentoring.
Yeah, indeed you offer mentoring, because I had 6 wonderful mentoring sessions with you, so thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
you're also a fellow disabled queer poet, so woohoo, you're part of the cool kids.
Oh yes. It's a very great community to be a part of.
Absolutely, yeah. Disabled and queer, I think, is a particularly interesting intersection. You haven't always been disabled, though. So what's it been like for you to suddenly find yourself outside of the mainstream circle?
That's an amazing question. It's just a complete shock, to be honest. Mm. I don't think I realised how bad ableism was until I became disabled myself, and then I saw it firsthand.
Yeah, it really hit me hard as well. Like, after being diagnosed, it's like a veil gets lifted and you can suddenly see all forms of media, books, TV, newspaper articles, political speeches. You suddenly feel almost attacked by the world from every angle. It's holding up a mirror which is telling you you're other.
Absolutely. It's incredibly overwhelming as well.
Yeah, so has it changed the way you relate to other people?
Yeah, I think it's definitely made me angrier at the world. It's definitely made me maybe even resent able-bodied people at times. But it's also brought me a lot closer to the disabled community as well.
I think that's a probably very like rational and normal response as well, is to feel quite a lot of anger and frustration, particularly when we're not represented well, when we haven't got that understanding from others around us who aren't within the community, which then naturally draws us together, you know, with other disabled people. I think you wrote a poem about comments that you'd received about an interview that you did about COVID. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, so I was interviewed by Derbyshire Live, and it was in regards to when the restrictions were first lifted on masks and social distancing. Mm. And I was incredibly frustrated at the time as a disabled person, because I was like, well, the government are putting people at risk, and chronically ill and disabled people are going to be the ones that have to suffer for it. Yeah. When wearing a mask and social distancing are just such simple, basic things that people can do to keep other people safe. I was incredibly angry, and I discussed this in the interview, and I basically said that Boris Johnson is just happy for people to die, essentially. And after this interview was published, I probably shouldn't have gone and read the comments afterwards, but you know how you just do.
Yeah.
I went to go read the comments afterwards, and some of them were really supportive and lovely, but some of them were absolutely dreadful, and they were like directly attacking me, and I was like, who are these people who think it's okay to like directly attack a disabled person? I was like, what?
Yeah.
And a lot of them were just saying like, oh, we just need to go back to normal. Oh, just move on. Oh, it's just a cold. And, you know, the kind of comments that people have been saying all the way through the pandemic.
Yeah,
that just pretend.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? This has really pissed me off. I'm gonna write a poem about it. And I decided to write a satirical poem called Just Move On.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And seeing that, I think that was at a point when my resistance was quite low already. And I'd been performing Casual Eugenics, which is my poem about a similar thing. And I'd got really disheartened with the public's response and how people were still saying, like, well, come on, you know, it's only impacting the vulnerable, the old people, disabled people. And I was like, well, hang on, how can you just cast aside people like they're nothing? So listening to your poem, and then, you know, it kind of reignited my strength. So thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. Like, it's so nice to be able to connect with somebody that just gets it. I absolutely love your poem, Casual Eugenics.
Oh, thank you. So, yeah, so have you found that being disabled in a pandemic has created quite a lonely place for you to be in?
Definitely. It's been, I would probably say, one of the most isolating times in my life to be diagnosed with a chronic illness when we were already in a pandemic was incredibly hard, because I was kind of like, well, what do I do now? Who do I talk to? How do I live with this? And it was during a time when you couldn't really go out and meet other people because it wasn't safe to, because of COVID. So it was very much having to deal with it on my own and not really knowing what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
So that was really, really hard.
And have you found writing to be a healing practice?
Massively. I mean, writing has always been incredibly therapeutic for me. My first book that I wrote was very much about my experience going through abuse and mental health, and it was just such a cathartic experience. And then I'm very much now writing a lot about my experience with being disabled and chronically ill as well, and that's helping to release a lot of pent-up emotion, I think.
Fantastic. And I'm sure it's really healing for other people who will read your work. I know Metamorphosis has got some fantastic poems about the medical system, about the healthcare system, and your experience of being ill. And again, I think that's going to feed really wonderfully into your second book, and I can't wait to read it.
Oh, thank you so much. that's what I hope for. I hope that it'll be sort of there as sort of like a friend for people when they're struggling, and that they can sort of connect with it.
Oh my God. And I'm sure it will be. It's so wonderful to have writers like yourself who are well known, and you're on the radio and you perform at various festivals and stuff, which is just fantastic. And so having someone that's quite prominent discuss these things when often we feel like we're sidelined, it's just brilliant and really healing. So thank you.
Oh my word, you think I'm prominent?
I do. I'm gonna fuck it. It starts here. You are prominent.
It's amazing. This I'm gonna like put this on my website. This is gonna be my tagline when people book me. George said that I am prominent.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Thank you. You can just make it your ringtone as well. Charlotte Love. prominent. So, okay, wonderful. So you've got writing as a form of support. You've got the disabled community. Now, obviously, we can't really connect with people face to face at the moment. So have you found that there has been a shift to connecting with people in an online community? Have you found other people that you can discuss things with online?
I would say so. Yeah, I think when I first became ill, I started sort of searching things on social media to see if anybody else was sort of going through the experience as I was. And the chronic illness community and the disabled community is just absolutely huge, like especially on Instagram. And I found that a lot of people were sort of sharing their own stories and talking about what had worked for them and what hadn't. And that just made me feel less alone in all of it. And sometimes I would message people or private message them, or sometimes just like listening to their stories would just
make me feel a little bit more whole. So yeah, that has been massively helpful as part of my journey.
Wonderful. And seeing the variety of people living with chronic illness, people living with disabilities as well, which you really get to see on social media in a way that I don't feel we've seen before.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like it's just huge. And especially to see young people as well, because it's a common misconception that only sort of old people get ill or have disabilities. Mm. And a lot of people don't realize that it is possible to get them when you're younger.
Yeah, that's one of my pet peeves is when people look me up and down with my walking stick and say, oh, but you're too young to be disabled. Mm. And it's just, in fact, I think this is a perfect time to share the Susan Sontag quote from Illness as Metaphor.
Oh, I love that book.
So you got me interested in this book. And then one of the wonderful things happened, which was my disabled friend who I'd met on Twitter, who's in the online disability community. We did a book Twitter, Secret Santa, and she got me this book for Secret Santa, and I like was absolutely over the moon. So it's, yeah, beautiful. the quote that begins the book is, "Illness is the night side of life, a more onerous citizenship. Everyone who is born holds dual citizenship in the kingdom of the well and the kingdom of the sick. Although we all prefer to use the good passport, sooner or later, each of us is obliged, at least for a spell, to identify ourselves as citizens of that other place." Mm. So how do you feel that quote sums up illness, disability?
Yeah, I think Susan Sontag's just absolutely amazing. And I think that really does sum it up. And I've even done a little nod to her in one of my poems as well, because after I read Illness as Metaphor, it really inspired me. So,
oh my God.
I love that we both had that same connection with it.
Is this from your new poetry collection? Is this a new poem?
It is.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm so excited. Is it by any chance a poem that you're going to share with us this evening, or is it a different poem? And can I?
I'm not sure if it's ready yet, but I will share some poetry with you this evening.
Okay, fantastic. I really can't wait to hear the one that's inspired by Susan Sontag as well. So the really interesting thing I found about her book is it was written in the 70s, and it's kind of a critique of Illness as Metaphor through the ages to describe people's moral failings, their lack of character, their strength, sins which have become kind of manifested in their disability. So even though Susan Sontag's book was written in the 70s, I feel like there's so much that's applicable to how we view disability and illness today. So my question to you is, do you think we're ever going to move away from having a moralistic slant put on, if somebody's ill, they're not just ill, but they've done something to deserve that illness, or if they die, it's because their character wasn't strong enough, their willpower wasn't strong enough? So do you think we're going to start seeing authentic representation where we can separate illness from sin and from character or lack thereof?
I would really like to hope so. But then again, I think that is also dependent on there being more actual disabled writers to represent disability better, but also able-bodied people educating themselves as well. So
it's definitely got to be a balance of the two, hasn't it? So yeah, I mean, having poets like you talk about it openly is fantastic. Having representation on TV, even in like sex education, I absolutely love that there's a guy in a wheelchair, and then there's also people in the background in wheelchairs. Like, it's just normalized at last.
Absolutely. I still need to watch that as well.
Oh my God, get on it. It's so good. Like, it's
been recommended by so many people.
It's so fucking good. And it's got Gillian Anderson in it, who is my absolute idol.
I love her.
Me too. So more specifically, how has your disability affected your involvement in the poetry scene?
So it's not been the best, to be honest. I mean, it's been quite hard because when I started feeling ill, obviously I wasn't well enough to attend online things during the pandemic anyway. But then as I sort of started to learn how to manage my illness a bit more and restrictions were lifted, a lot of people just went back to things being in person. And not many event organizers were considering doing hybrid events. So again, it sort of left me feeling very alienated from the community. And a big part of the reason why I decided to move to Derby back in 2020 is because I wanted to be more involved in the poetry scene. So that's been really, really hard for me because I've very much seen the poetry community as my family. So it was almost like I was like not a part of my family. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And that's also heartbreaking to hear. But I think other people have got similar stories of being isolated from the queer community. Most events have now immediately revoked their offer of online attendance, which is really, really difficult for a lot of us.
It's very frustrating, and it just feels like we've almost taken a step back. I feel like we'd learned so much during the pandemic about how useful doing online events can be, and it was like people then didn't decide to incorporate that, which just seems so strange.
I think it's really bizarre because from my point of view, if you're offering a hybrid event, you've automatically opened it up to people who might want to attend from literally anywhere in the world. So you've tapped into an additional market. You're also being accessible, so you get to wave the accessibility flag, which is fantastic. Tap into the disabled dollar, increase your revenue. I don't understand why organizers haven't continued on that. And I'd really like to see it come back and hopefully stay.
That's what we're all hoping for. I mean, I've even gone to the point where I've messaged individual nights and I've been like, any plans to go hybrid?
Oh my god, that's amazing.
And I've had positive sort of replies from some people who have said, we've got people coming down and recording and then it'll be going online later. And I've had more negative replies from some people who have been like, we don't have the money to do this, and we don't have like the tech. And I'm just like, but it doesn't cost anything just to film on your phone or just to take in a computer and go on Zoom. Like, you don't have to have high-tech camera equipment to film a night. Like, we're not asking for it to be like a professional thing. We just want to be included.
Exactly. And also you'd make that money back within a couple of ticket sales, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a real shame to see events taken away, also working from home and all the accommodations that disabled people have been begging for a lifetime, and they were kind of dangled there because able-bodied people needed them and now they don't anymore, they've gone. Which is really where Rebel Riot Poetry comes in, Charlotte. Shameless promotion there. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about what we've got planned?
You know who is accessible?
Exactly. You know what poetry night you can attend from your living room / bedroom?
Rebel Riot Poetry. Talking to the audience, myself and George were talking about creating our own poetry night that would be inclusive and accessible, because we're very much aware that there's a lot of people that don't feel comfortable going back to events in person, and we just wanted it to be there and available for everybody. And plus, we just thought we'd run a kick-ass night together as well, and we both love poetry, so why not?
I mean, it seems to be just a perfect idea, which we get to kind of see the launch of in, sorry, I've lost my words.
End of March.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So we've got the launch at the end of March. We've not just got open mic acts, though, have we? We've got featured acts. Oh, my God.
Exactly. And there might even be a sneaky couple of poems from the co-host, too.
Oh, what? No way.
What more do you need?
Exactly. I'm incredibly excited about this. We've got UK slam champion, poet and storyteller Rick Dove kicking us off for the first ever one on March 28th. Please book your tickets. All the open mic slots are gone, unfortunately. And May is starting to fill up, and September.
Absolutely insane.
It's wild. It's so wild. So general audience tickets are still on sale. So please go and grab yourself one before they all go as well.
Exactly. It's not one to miss.
It really isn't. And I don't know if you've had a look at the open mic lineup as well. But oh my God.
Oh my God. It's so good. It's so good.
So good. Like,
I'm really excited for this launch.
Me too. Me too. If you would like to find out any more details, please look on Facebook at Rebel Riot Poetry, or probably just follow one of us on social media and we'll be posting about it sooner or later.
Woo!
Woo! So excited. So on the subject of poetry, do you have a poem for us?
What would you like to hear?
All of them.
All of them. I don't know if we've got time for all of them.
If you just sit down and read through Metamorphosis, that would be great.
Oh, I could read Just Move On if you want. The one that I mentioned earlier.
I love Just Move On. Yes, please. Yeah.
Okie doke. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Just Move On. I want my freedom. It's been way too long. This police state has us in fear. I want to go to Wetherspoons and have another beer. It's only like the flu, me duck. I'm sure you'll be all right. And remember that from Monday, Bojo's given the okay. All cozy in his refurb in London, tucked away. I want to peruse my salad with my mouth, breathe again on strangers and start to get about. All these pro-maskers must be related, sticking up for the vulnerably berated. Don't you know these vaccines turn your tongue green and make you put on weight? Forget about your Tinder shag, you'll never get a date. It's all in your head, you just don't want to work. Get back to your job and stop being so hurt. Bring it on, because nothing stops me from having fun. Your health is not my responsibility. Shut up, sit down, move on.
Oh my God, I love it so much. And it soothes a little bit of my rage every time I hear it. Just a little bit.
Mine too.
It's been such a weird experience saying, you know, we're asking for this very tiny accommodation, which is literally just wearing a mask in public. Please don't sneeze on me.
I know.
People are acting like we're taking over their bodies. It's so bizarre.
Like a possession.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very much like you look at how the female body is treated and the restrictions that have been imposed on that, and then you see people protesting wearing a mask and you're like, really?
It's absolutely insane.
It really is. And then I don't know how you found it, but I found a lot of people kind of almost the vibe is that, you know, they're kind of putting an arm around me and apologetically saying, you just need to realize that what you're saying is unreasonable and that it is just a cold and you're being out of order expecting people to make all these accommodations.
That is basically how it feels. It just feels like people are so bothered about having their freedom, I say in inverted quotes, that they just don't care about other people's lives. And it's like, well, if you'd actually been oppressed, you'd know what it was like to not have your freedom, but you've not. So
yeah, and it's if you can complain about wearing a mask, I feel like you've had a pretty easy life. Generally, I'm sure there are some exceptions where, you know, for some people it brings up feelings of claustrophobia or PTSD, and that's completely different. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
because
obviously there are genuine like exemptions, and that's completely understandable. But for people that go around saying they're exempt when they're not, that's really frustrating.
Very frustrating. Has it impacted your sense of self-worth?
Yeah, definitely. I had to think about it, but yeah, I would say it has, because it just makes me feel like people don't care about my life.
Mm.
and yeah. don't care about whether I get ill and how that will affect me. And that's really hard to take.
Absolutely. I feel the same. Has it had, has that had a knock-on effect on your ability to create, or are you finding that you're actually able to tap into, I don't know, some kind of inner well of strength, which mine seems to be a bit shaky at the moment, but you've got some kind of inner strength where you can override that feeling of having your self-worth challenged, and instead you're not afraid of speaking your truth?
I think it's more the rage that's actually keeping me going. I think it's the rage that is actually allowing me to create, because anger is such a difficult emotion to actually deal with in a healthy way. And for me, I find it really helpful to actually get it out on paper. And I remember there was a particular evening where I felt incredibly overwhelmed, and I'd been reading the news right before I was about to go to bed, and I was that was a bad move, bad move, Charlotte. But it was when they were talking about potentially the fact that lateral flow tests weren't going to be free anymore, and I was like,
yeah.
"What?" I was like, "But that affects people who are poor. That's yeah. who's gonna struggle with that the most." And I was just like so overwhelmed, so sad. And I was like, what does the future hold? Like, mm-hmm. are things going to get better? And I just ended up writing, you've probably heard it actually. That's when I wrote, "When Do We Riot?"
Oh my God, yes.
I was really, really upset. And I was like, what am I going to do with these feelings? And I was just like, right, it's going into a poem. And that really helped. And I felt so much better after that.
Obviously, I hate that you're feeling angry and frustrated and upset, but I am so glad that it makes you write poetry, because then I hear it and I get a little bit less angry and sad and frustrated. So so thank you.
And that's the beautiful thing about it, because I feel other people can connect. And if it even like sort of starts up conversations and starts up activism as well, then that's really important.
Definitely. As you say, anger is one of those emotions which I think a lot of the time we're taught to ignore, or we're taught to see as a very negative thing. But actually, it can also be a really powerful force for change. And I think channeling our anger into something productive is so wonderful. And it can light a fire that then goes and, you know, my fucking words are just... inspires other people.
Fire to inspire. No, that's good. We're doing well.
So obviously we've talked about Susan Sontag, who is an influence of both of ours. Do you have anyone else that you would recommend people read, or people go and hunt down and watch?
Oh, there's so many. And sort of on the theme around disability as well, I was talking to poet Daniel Sluman a while back, and he was saying how there's not sort of enough poetry out there around disability and disabled poets who, you know, have experienced chronic illness, which I thought was really interesting, because as I've been trying to sort of find books like that to inspire my own work, I've realised how little of it there actually is. So that sort of pushes me even more to want to write my own book, because I'm like, there needs to be more of this out there. But Daniel Sluman's new book in itself, Single Window, is absolutely amazing. Is it something you've read yet?
So I haven't got around to reading it. It's on my it's on my list. I too have been seeking out disabled creatives and their poetry collections. Stephen Lightbound, The Last Custodian, is the last one I read by Burning. Ooh. It's out with Burning Eye Books, and it's just fantastic. It weaves the story of this man in a wheelchair who wakes to find that he's the only person left in the world, and so he travels across the country, and you've got this wonderful map that accompanies all these different poems as it tells the story of his journey. And he discusses, is he even disabled if he's the only person left?
That's really interesting.
It's really interesting. Definitely worth a read.
Oh yeah, I'll have to add that to my TBR list.
I have to ask this question because we're talking about influences. Your poetry incorporates quite a lot of colours in really unusual senses. They use like purple and yellow to describe kind of smells and sounds. Can you please tell me some more about that? What where does that come from? It's very the yellow wallpaper. Is it the yellow wallpaper?
Oh, I love the yellow wallpaper.
Oh my God, obsessed, right?
Charlotte Perkins Gilman. Yes.
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting you should say that because I don't know if I've never noticed that that's something that I do. I'm very much as a poet, I'm very interested in imagery and sort of being able to visualize things and being able to get the reader to sort of visualize things. And I think that's very much influenced by Sylvia Plath, who is one of my absolute favorite poets of all time. So yeah. That is probably where I get my colours from, in a sense of like I like to I'm very sensory. I like to be able to like see things and paint a picture. So yeah, maybe that's where it comes from. But yeah, I've not noticed that that's something I do actually. So that's really interesting.
Maybe I've just, you know, only heard or only read the poems that have colours in them. I'm not sure, but I really love the way that you kind of describe. I think it was like keep the purple out of my ears or something. I was like, yeah.
Oh, that was the prompt from Charlotte Brogan's workshop that she did on IG Live.
Oh, amazing. So this goes again back to finding the online community and how it inspires us. It's wonderful.
That was an amazing day in itself, because I was particularly struggling with my chronic fatigue and I was having a really hard time. And you know, when you're just sort of in that, you're kind of like, what can I do with myself? Because even sort of watching something is really hard.
Yeah.
And I just found myself scrolling through Instagram when she popped up that she was going live and doing a workshop. And I was like, I'll tap into this. And if I've got the energy, like I'll give it a little go. And she gave the most amazing prompt, where it was one of those where you offer a word and then you write for a bit and then you offer another word and you carry on writing. And purple was actually one of the words.
Oh.
And it was just lovely. And I had such a nice time. And I was like, that's cheered me up so much.
That was fantastic. No, it's such a good poem as well. So that's brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
I love those moments where you think, I'm so ill, there's no way that creating anything is going to be possible today. And then, you know, you push yourself to attend a workshop or you push yourself to just do a little exercise. And then you're like, holy fuck, I've written something really, really amazing.
Where did this come from?
Exactly. But then, okay, so I'm really curious. Often we get told as writers, we need to be writing every day, come hell or high water, no matter what. As a chronically ill creative, how does that make you feel?
It's just, that just is not going to happen, is it, to be honest? I think that's part of the problem though. Like, we're living in a society where there's just so much pressure on being productive all the time. Like, it half makes me wonder whether that's what partly puts people in these situations where they end up developing chronic illnesses, because they're just pushing and burning out. And I know from my personal experience, I was constantly going through burnouts before I got ill. I think just now I am ill, I'm learning to slow down so much more, and my writing is having to do the same thing. And I'm having to tell myself that that's okay, because part of me was like, oh, should I set a deadline for getting out my second book? And I was like, you know what? No, I'm just going to enjoy the writing process and see what happens.
Yeah. I think that's so important as well for you, and also for your art as well, because people are going to be able to tell what I write is never that good if I'm flogging myself and if, you know, I can barely stand up, but I'm still trying to type at my keyboard.
So easy to do though, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And then you've also got this really perverse thing of artists being encouraged to mine their pain or mine their chronic illness or whatever terrible situation they've gone through for their art in the name of art. And I think that is so unhealthy as well. Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a word for that, isn't there?
Is there? Oh my God, is there?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure it's like trauma something. I'll have to look into it after this.
Like trauma porn. I'm gonna say it's
yeah.
Trauma.
I think that is something along those lines. But yeah, it's almost like I don't know. What was it? You that I had a conversation with where we said people seem to celebrate when you're reading like your most difficult, sad, traumatic poems when you're at performance nights.
I'm not sure if that was me, but it definitely that strikes true for sure.
Yeah,
and it's
although saying that, sorry, carry on.
No, you carry on. Sorry,
I was just gonna say, although saying that, I am also that poet that writes all the traumatic poems and doesn't write anything happy, so I can't really talk.
No, I think there's a balance, isn't there, between so I use writing as catharsis quite a lot, and I think it's so important to pin your trauma to the page, to get it out and to share our stories so that we can encourage healing in other people and not just ourselves. But I think there's also this trend of people posting on social media, people creating works of art which are so deeply ingrained with their trauma, and it feels like it's being created from a place where there's no boundaries. And often I read, you know, these fucking like adverts that pop up about how to be an excellent writer, and it's like take the most traumatic part of your life and then write about it. What the fuck are you doing?
No, it's awful. Crazy.
Free writing as well. I want to quickly touch on free writing. So I've been in workshops where so free writing is a fantastic tool, obviously, for generating material, but also for just kind of brain dumping. And I like to think of it as kind of clearing the dirty water out of a tap, so you've got the clear flow of creativity afterwards. But I think the danger is that in workshops, people don't always put a time limit on it. They don't put a boundary on it. So I think if you limit it to a certain time or a certain number of pages, that's great. But when people are being encouraged to free write for extensive periods of time and just keep delving and delving and picking in their brain, it's dangerous psychologically.
Yeah, that makes sense. Who does that though? Who gets people to free write for that amount of time? That's bonkers.
No, I know. It's like this whole it's just about creating every day. It's the Julia Cameron thing, but taken to like the extreme. So Julia Cameron is the artist's way, and it's like write 3 pages every day, which is fine. If you can do that, that's great. If you're chronically ill, maybe try 3 sentences. And if that's too much, don't put any pressure on yourself. But I think, yeah, some people are just kind of encouraged to just keep digging and keep going. And we end up with burnout as creatives.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose it also depends on the kind of free write though, because there is some free writes where people just say, write what's ever in your head. But sometimes I've known people to give vague prompts for people to free write about at the beginning of a workshop as well. So I suppose if it's slightly more structured, you can veer away from certain harmful experiences, maybe.
No, absolutely. Completely agree. I love a prompted free write. Okay, so finally, as a non-binary pansexual and disabled person, I often feel and get treated like a mythical creature. I've claimed myself as a horny, fire-spitting dragon, mostly for the sake of puns. We've had some really deep and meaningful answers on here from other guests. If you were a mythical creature, what would you be and why?
I love this question.
Are you ready for it? Were you prepared?
Oh my word. Well, to be honest, I've always described myself as a fairy mermaid princess. So I would be all three.
That is so powerful. Oh my God. Okay, is it like going to the reasons
all amazing. I just because I'm very much like, I don't know, I'm colorful and I love glitter and I love wearing flower crowns, and I just feel like those things really embody who I am.
Your aesthetic is very much fairy mermaid princess, definitely.
Thank you so much.
I love it. No, that's amazing. And I love that it's an answer that is based kind of like solely on the things that you love and the appearance that you like to present to the world, and not anything deep, like because you want to go and, I don't know, be a siren on the rocks and destroy men because smash the patriarchy or something. It's
just... Well, there is that too.
Okay, yeah.
Now you mention it.
You can have it all. You can have it all. Oh my God, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on. I will put your social media links in the description of this podcast. Have you anything else you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, could I potentially share a sneaky upcoming workshop?
Absolutely. Why are we holding back?
I know. I should have just let it out. Should have just let
tell
it
us
out.
All about it.
So I've been given the really exciting opportunity of working for a health and social care membership organization. Ooh. And I'm basically going to be running a mindfulness masterclass, a poetry mindfulness masterclass for their members. But they've said that I can also offer the invitation out to my networks as well. So wow. It's a free workshop, which is amazing. So if anybody would like to come and join us for like a really lovely, peaceful, gentle writing class, then please do. I think all the information is on my social medias anyway, but it'll be on the 3rd of March. And yeah, if anybody wants any more information, you can just drop me a message.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. And like a really good for the soul session as well, so that's perfect.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I'm totally
amazing.
Yay, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, it's been amazing.
You have been brilliant. Thank you. And a huge thanks to our listeners. Remember, do check out Rebel Riot Poetry. We have our launch on the 28th of March with the fabulous Rick Dove, and myself and Charlotte Lunn will also be performing a very small set. All of the open mic tickets have now gone, which is extraordinary, and the open mic tickets for May and September are also filling up. So if you do want to come along and share some poetry, sign up now. You can find more information on Facebook at Rebel Riot Poetry, or on OutSavvy, where you can also book tickets. Until next time, stay curious.